Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers, text number 41. Evam svakarma patitam bhavamaitaranyam anyonya janma manasa sharana bita bitam Pashan janam svaparavigraha vaitar maitram Hanteti parachara pivrihi buddha adya. Evam. In this way, sukarma patitam. Fallen because of the reaction of one's own material activities. Bhava, compared to the world of nations. Birth, death, old age, and disease. Vaitaranyam, in the river known as Vaitarani, which lies in front of the doorway of Yamaraj. Imagine having a house, you open your door, and there's the Vaitarani River there. That's where all the Buddhists merge into. The superintendent of death. Anyaya, anya, anya. One after another. Janma, janma. Birth. Marna. Death. Asana. Different types of eating. Bita, bitam. Being exceedingly afraid. Pashan, seeing. Janam, the living entity. Swa, one's own. Para, of others. Vigraha, in the body. Vairamaitram, considering friendship and enmity. Handa, alas, in this way, parachara, O you, who are on the other side of the river of death, piprihi, kindly save us all from this dangerous condition. Mudam, we're all foolish, bereft of spiritual knowledge. Adya, today, because you're personally present here. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord, you're always transcendentally situated on the other side of the river of death, but because of the reactions of our own activities, we are suffering on this side. Indeed, we have fallen into this river and are repeatedly suffering the pains of birth and death and eating horrible things. I kindly look upon us, not only upon me, but upon others who are suffering, and by your causeless mercy and compassion, deliver us and maintain us. Prabhupada, Prahlad Maharaj, a pure Vaishnava, prays to the Lord, not only for himself, but for all other suffering living entities. There are two classes of Vaishnavas, the Bhajanandis and the Ghostanandis. The Bhajanandis worship the Lord only for their own personal benefit, but the Ghostanandis try to elevate all others to Krishna consciousness, so they may be saved. Fools who cannot perceive repeated birth and death, and the other miseries of materialistic life, cannot be sure of what will happen to them in their next birth. Indeed, these foolish, materially contaminated rascals have manufactured an irresponsible way of life that does not consider the next life. They do not know that according to one's own activities, one receives a body selected from 8,400,000 species. These rascals have been described in Bhagavad Gita as Diskrituna Mudha. Non-devotees, those who are not Krishna conscious, must engage in sinful activities. Therefore, they are murhas, fools and rascals. They are such fools that they do not know what will happen to them in their next life. Although they see varieties of living entities eating abominable things, pigs eating stool, crocodiles eating all kinds of flesh, and so on, they do not realize that they themselves, because their practice eating all kinds of nonsense in this life, would be destined to eat the most abominable things in their next life. A Vaishnava is always afraid of such abominable life, and to free himself from such horrible conditions, he engages himself in the devotional service to the Lord. The Lord is compassionate to them, and therefore he appears for their benefit. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam shijamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. The Lord is always ready to help the fallen souls, but because they are fools and rascals, they do not take to Krishna consciousness and abide by the instructions of Krishna. Therefore, though Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is personally the Supreme Lord, Krishna, he comes as a devotee to preach the Krishna consciousness movement. Yari Deka Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh. One must therefore become a sincere servant of Krishna. Amara Agaya Guru Hana Tare Desh. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 7.128. One should become a guru and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world simply by preaching the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Evam svakarma patitam bhavavaitaranyam anyonya janva maranashanabhitabhitam pashanjanam svaparavigraha vairamaitram hanteti paracharab piprihi mudam adhyaha. My dear Lord, you are always transcendently situated on the other side of the river of death. But because of the reactions of our own activities, we are suffering on this side. Indeed, we have fallen into this river and are repeatedly suffering the pains of birth and death and eating horrible things. I kindly look upon us, not only upon me, but also upon all others who are suffering. And by your causeless mercy and compassion, deliver us and maintain us. In the previous verse, Prahlad Maharaj expresses concern that by being involved in sense gratification, the conditioned soul's intelligence has been stolen and covered. And what is the result of that? Pashanapi napashati, which is the Pashanapi means, although we're seeing, although the conditioned soul is seeing, he's not actually seeing. This is the wonder of Krishna's illusory energy, as Maharaj Yudhisthira told his father in the form of a yaksha when he asked him 100 questions. One of the questions was, what is the most amazing thing? Maharaj Yudhisthira replied, Ahani, Ahani, Bhutani, Gacchantiya Yamalayam, Shesha, Stavara Vichani Kimashayam Atakparam. At least we're consistent. We can't be awake, at least we'll be inconsistent. So the most amazing thing was Ahani, Ahani, Bhutani. Every day, we're seeing so many living entities are entering into the joys of death. Ahani, ahani, bhuta, gacchanti, yamalayam, shesha, stavara, ichchanti, kimascharyam, atakpuram. But those who are remaining behind, they think, this is not going to happen to me, couldn't happen to me. We're going to be here forever. No sense of making plans for something that will never happen. As Prabhupada said, you can walk outside, in some places at least, and you can see trees, especially here in Slovenia. Now one may wonder why these living entities have become trees. Of course, a common man, by being brainwashed by modern education, will not even think that the trees are living entities. They don't believe that cows have souls. Even so, fairly modern religion, claims that animals have no souls. And that same religion, one of the biggest philosophers in that religion, claimed that there are three kinds of souls. There's men's souls, which are human souls. There's animal souls, which don't exist. They have animal soul, which is not really a soul. And then there is women. They have a soul in between the animals and the human beings, the men. Now, luckily that philosophy is not so prevalent nowadays. But at one time it was actually considered quite valid. Now Prabhupada said, what's the difference between an animal and a human being? Then an animal, even an animal, what does it speak of anyone else? If you take the cow's calf away, it'll begin to cry. So what is the explanation of the materialist? Oh, this is a chemical reaction. Oh, if I hit you in the nose, you start to cry. Is that also just a chemical reaction? Is that the logic behind what you're saying? Well, for a cow, it's a chemical reaction. For us, it's our feelings. Yes, and we're supposed to, it's all logical and supposed to, they don't even pretend I don't think it's logical. Just like, if you ask them, what is the theory of evolution? How does one species of life change to the next? They'll say, it happens. Okay, how does it happen? Well, we don't know, but it just happens. Now, of course, they try to prove it, that the so-called theory of evolution, which is not really a theory, because a theory means you have to have something to work on that you can experiment with, and by that experiment and through observation, conclude if the theory is correct or not. But since they've tried in so many different ways of trying to ascertain whether this idea that bodies, by some kind of evolutionary process, change from one to the next, since that is all proved to be a failure, therefore they don't even really try to define what the theory of evolution is anymore. Either you blindly accept it or you're fired from your job. Either you go to the museum and pay obeisances to the altar there, or the dinosaurs and everything else, or else you're a fanatic religious, possibly terrorist, who can't accept modern science. Now, even Darwin, he got his theory from part of it from Lamarck. And Lamarck had this idea that how did giraffe get a long neck? Well, there were little giraffes originally, and then due to the circumstances, the leaves on the trees were bigger than their necks could reach. So they stretched their neck. Or those who had the longer necks, they survived, and all the other little giraffes, they all died. Now, because the big giraffes with the long necks, and because they stretched them, therefore in their next lifetime, their children, because of the stretched necks of the giraffes, they also got stretched necks. Now, this may seem ludicrous now, but at that time they had no idea what heredity was. That was Mengel, a German scientist named Mendel had to do some experiments to figure out that just if your father stretches his neck, then when you're born, oh my God, why do I have such a long neck? Well, your father used to stretch his neck all the time. Oh, now I understand. Why do you stretch your neck so much? It's really... That's not how the genes work. That's not how heredity works. But anyhow, that was included. And then Darwin, there was no science of biology, developed science of biology. Let's speak of, you know, studying the cell. There were no microscopes to look into the cell to see what the cell was. So Darwin thought that the cell is just a blob of matter, just some chemicals put together. And that certainly, you know, certain chemicals put together produce a certain amount of certain type of life. So that in the course of time, the chemicals change and therefore the forms of life change. Little did he know that the cell is a very intricate system. Every cell, of which there's trillions in the body, is more intricate than a city. Its systems of energy production, transportation, systems of cell of the garbage disposal, the process of erecting and repairing different parts of the cell are more complicated than a city as big as New York. Every cell. And it's going on quite intelligently. It just doesn't, you know, happen. It goes on with supreme inconceivable intelligence, how the whole cell is working, transporting things, eliminating things, producing energy, reconstruction, construction, and it's all going on systematically, and they're not bumping into each other. The garbage disposal unit of the cell, the construction unit, the repair unit, the energy producing unit, they're all systematically laid out in every cell and doing exactly what the job is. Luckily, if you become part of the cell, you never get fired. It's because they all do their work so nicely. More nicely than in a city, the construction workers, the utility workers, they can go on strike. But there's no instance of a cell, the inner workings of a cell, the mitochondria, the different parts of the cell, the nucleus, they never go on strike. They're very systematic, organized, and obedient, for the most part, unless they rebel and then there's a fight. Now, considering that, Darwin had this idea that we could prove evolution through the fossil structure. So they dug into the earth looking for bones. And all they found was bones. And the bones they found didn't indicate what they wanted them to indicate. So they kept on digging and digging, trying to find bones that would actually prove what they were trying to prove. And lo and behold, the more bones they found, the more they found out they were wrong. So did they admit they were wrong? No, anyone who dared speak up and say we were wrong, they got fired from their job. And the only survivors all say, oh yeah, that's right, we're right. Doesn't matter what we find. Pashana pina pasha. We don't see. We only see our paycheck at the end of the week. Because when I went to school, they had this book talking about evolution that they gave to the students. And it showed a little horse, and then they showed a bigger horse, and then they showed a bigger horse, and then they showed the modern day horse, and the idea was that the horse went from a little horse to a big horse by the process of evolution. What they didn't tell us was that that little horse was found in a higher level than the next horse above it. I should say. And that that other horses, big horses, were found in layers of strata lower than all the other horses. So that was quite a disappointment, but anyhow, we don't worry about those things. And then they decide, all right, let's prove it in a different way. This strata is disproving what we're saying. There must be some way we can... Yes, the process of evolution is by genetic manipulation. So let's take acidophilus flies, bombard them with radiation, change their characteristics, and certainly after some generations we'll get a bird from the fly. So they did it. They kept on, they bombarded these poor flies with radiation. The color of their eyes changed. They got 8 wings instead of 4. They kept on doing it and doing it. And lo and behold, practically all the flies died from their attempt at manipulation. And then they kept on doing it anyhow. The few poor remaining flies kept on bombarding them and trying to, you know. And then they found out at the end, the flies just came back to their original form. So that definitely didn't work. Didn't approve what they... So there was no mechanism they could figure out. There's no evidence in the strata. There's nothing they could reproduce. All they had was a theory. So all they've been doing since then is just manipulating the theory. They came up with what's called punctuated equilibrium theory. Because all the species appear at once in the strata. So what they said is evolution took place instantaneously. Oh, yeah, sure. Of course, there's no other way it could have been done. And other kinds of theory. They don't, if we study the literature, we'll find out they don't talk about these things so much anymore. Because it's not very productive for them. They've brainwashed people enough that any field of science, including alternative science, they'll always, even when you study things like yoga and Ayurveda, whatever, they always refer back to evolution. Yeah, the reason why this happened, of course, we can't explain its origin. It couldn't be God. It's evolution. The whole idea of evolutionary theory was to eliminate God from the equation, which is basically modern science, its attempt to explain everything without God. So, naturally, they always throw in, yeah, why did this happen at the beginning? What was the beginning? How does DNA and RNA, how did DNA form RNA to provide the energy in the soul? Well, obviously it was by evolution from chemicals. If you read Ayurvedic literature, they'll say at the beginning there was Krishna, Vishnu. And he established what's called Sankhya philosophy. He established the Prakriti or Avyakta, whatever, and from there came the false ego and the three modes of nature, etc. So it's based upon on a personalistic viewpoint, astrology, Ayurveda, whatever. And nowadays, even Ayurveda says, well, what was the beginning? It was impersonal Sankhya philosophy they adopted. That in the beginning there was nothing, whatever. We don't explain in the beginning. But anyhow, from Avyakta, from the energy, impersonal Brahman, came Prakriti, came the false ego. And then the false ego and the different modes form the working senses, the knowledge of acquiring senses, etc. They've eliminated Krishna because it's embarrassing for them. It goes against accepted, proven scientific evidence that we're all coming from the monkeys. Of course, you go to the zoo and you wait there for a long time waiting for the latest, for one of the monkeys that produced the human child. You can wait there a long time. Oh, there it is. Yeah, what? Wow, amazing. That monkey looks like my brother. So, because people have been more or less hammered again and again and again, and they've eliminated any kind of dissension, therefore people blindly accept if they want to survive in their occupation or be accepted as reasonable, rational human beings. And if anyone declares that the emperor has no clothes, they don't put clothes on the emperor, they get rid of the person who's declaring it. Give this guy a pair of glasses so he can see the emperor's clothes. So here Prahlad Maharaj is mentioning that there are trees, there are pigs who eat stool, there are crocodiles eating flesh. And they're also living entities like we are. So the question may be, how did they become crocodiles? How did they become pigs? How did they become a tree? To answer it by evolution is rather not an incomplete explanation. We don't say there's no such thing as evolution. I was listening to a class today by Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was talking about evolution. But our evolution is evolution of consciousness, that the soul gets the body according to the level of consciousness, and there is a different gradations of bodies, even explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam what the different gradations are. So we don't deny it, but we also deny the presence of the soul in the body. So therefore, an intelligent person will inquire, well, why is this? They look like they're souls. They're eating like we are, most of them. Trees eat through their roots. Pigs and crocodiles eat in different ways. They seem to be growing. They seem to be conscious. Subhas Bose, he did experiments showing how plants are conscious. If you have a plant and someone comes and burns a plant, one of his leaves, then when that same person comes in to the room again, then the plant registers fear. And if you play nice music to plants, then they actually grow better. I know people who play very nice music to their indoor plants, so the plants will grow better. Especially, I know one person who was growing marijuana plants inside to avoid getting caught, and he was using music, and the plants grew much bigger. So that means that the plants are listening to the music. And they've done experiments where they've had rock music or high-tech music, or tech music, techno music, and the plants withered and died. Shows that plants are more sophisticated than some people are. In any case, we're not trying to argue about taste of music, but the point is that plants have exhibited characteristics of conscious living entities that we have. So how can we deny that they're alive? In modern society, people kill cows, they say, because they're not alive. They seem to just, you know, some air is coming out when they're crying. Some mechanical thing. But if you try to kill their dog, they'll protest. He's part of the family. You can get arrested for beating a dog, and you'll get paid for beating a cow. So the people just don't have the proper perspective because they've been bewildered, because their intelligence has been taken away by illusion. They become mudas, not only by their activities, but by modern education. And therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is concerned that people should be educated in these simple matters, that you're not your body, the body's changing, you're a spiritual being, and that you're going to get another body, and you should prepare yourself for that next body. You have to be in harmony not only with nature, but the person who created nature. Nature didn't come out of nothing, it came from Krishna. And you should be in harmony with him. That's called devotional service. And then at least you'll get a higher body in your next lifetime and won't become degraded into an abominable species where you're going to have to do things which you would never think of doing at the present time. You'll have to be trained up by Yamaraj how to become a dog or a hog or a crocodile. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for nice lecture. I wonder, what is the destination of people when they leave body, like who are serving in the mood of ignorance, passion, and goodness? So,
serving what?
Like some people, even though they don't accept or acknowledge God, they are inclined to help.
Help what?
Like they're helping like to some cultural events or Red Cross or hospitals.
Most of the time these people go to the darkest regions of existence. Sometimes, you know, due to the fact that they have some helping, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if they're serving an actual good cause, they'll get some benefit from it. But if they're serving a so-called good cause, which actually is a bad cause, the result is they'll become even more degraded. It's like if you help a little old lady across the street, that's very good. But if her aim was to rob a bank, and she kills a few people in the course of doing it, then you've just aided a bank robber. You give a dollar, which is common, or some money to a bum on the street, and he goes and buys alcohol with it, then you become implicated in the sinful activity. Your money, your energy, just went for sinful activity, and he'll go to hell, and you'll go to hell with him for helping him. Therefore, charity, according to the Bhagavad Gita, should be given in the mode of goodness. Otherwise, you get reactions if it's given in ignorance or passion. Anything else? Yes.
Bhakta Marcel asks, what are the possibilities for souls in lower bodies to come closer to Krishna?
Only by the mercy of Vaishnava. We have examples. Of course, we don't know what their history was, how they got such a good fortune. But Shivananda Sen, when on his way to Jagannath Puri with his party, one dog began to accompany them. And on the way, Shivananda Sen somehow or another became attached to the dog and provided his meals every day. And even when they were about, they had to board a boat to go to another side of a river, and the boatman refused to take the dog on the boat, Shivananda Sen paid extra money so the dog could accompany them. And then it happened that one day they forgot, his servants didn't give that dog his daily meal, and he disappeared. So Shivananda Sen was quite disturbed. But that dog actually went to Jagannath Puri, and there he met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who, because of his association with the Vaishnava, gave him some mercy. And when Shivananda Sen arrived, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was throwing green coconut pulp to the dog, who was jumping up and eating it. And Shivananda Sen, when he saw that, he paid full dandavats to the dog. And then the dog, after some time, he jumped up, and he getting the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, He manifested a forearm form. He went back to Vaikuntha. So that sometimes happens. As it says in the Krishna book, that even a tree, its flowers are taken and offered to the deity, makes spiritual advancement. In the story of Putana. Putana offered her milk to Krishna which had poison in order to kill him. But because Krishna took the bright side, he accepted her milk and sucked out her poison and killed her. But still she got credit for the offering of the milk. So if a living entity somehow or another is engaged in Krishna's service, he'll get some benefit. Like there's a story of some rat in the Vedas, there's some temple had on Diwali day, the temple was covered with there were candles placed everywhere in order to honor Diwali, and one of the candles went out, but there was a rat in the temple, and it was running along, and its tail caught on fire, and when its tail was on fire, it relit one of the candles with its burning tail, and therefore it got credit for performing service on Diwali, and eventually went back to Godhead for that service, the beginning of his service. So, sometimes even animals can get inconceivable mercy. Yes.
Hare Krishna, in this context, as you mentioned, animals getting benefit
being connected with Krishna somehow.
Especially when they're connecting with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like the animals in the Jharkhanda forest.
Is this also valid for the cows which milk is offered to Krishna?
Yeah, of course. Because Krishna he's not against cows.
Because this is one of the arguments for, you know, because the devotees many times, or there is a tendency or actually statements that for the vegan, that's why the devotees are vegan, because this cow, we support by offering this milk which is not from protected cows, we are supporting the cow killing. So is right?
I know that's there's so many arguments. I mean, in Prabhupada used to use Life Boy soap. You know what Life Boy soap is? It's a brand of soap in America. It's called Ivory Soap. And he used to use in the devotees. It was said, but Prabhupada, what about, you know, do you know where it comes from? He said, at least it floats, soap. It's all, you know, in Kali Yuga, to expect perfection, you know, something completely pure. You might as well forget trying to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Just sit at home and try to get, you know, breathe perfectly pure air, eat perfectly pure food. I mean, it's not possible to avoid, have anything completely pure in Kali Yuga. Even the grains that we eat, because you have to eat something. The grains are not coming from perfectly protected bulls. The reason why we can get the grains is because they kill the bulls and use tractors. So why don't we stop eating grains and maybe they'll stop using tractors and killing bulls?
So it's okay to offer the milk which is not from protected cows?
Yeah, of course, Prabhupada did it. He never objected. Prabhupada once told one devotee who wouldn't come to class, whatever, he wasn't attending class, don't try to become a better Paramahansa than your Guru Maharaj.
That is saying also, no? Don't be more Pope-like than Pope himself.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandarai Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.